The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. Welcome, welcome. For those of you who celebrate Thanksgiving, I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving. In whatever shape that shows up. I guess this officially means we're in the holiday, quote-unquote, season now. So I'd like to start this evening's talk with sharing a little bit from this book by Sherry Huber. And this book is called, I Don't Want To. I Don't Feel Like It. I think it's a great book. Sherry Huber is a spiritual teacher, and on the surface, it looks like it's just a maybe like simple book, but it actually has some really deep teachings in there. It looks simple because it has little drawings and, I don't know, cute little stuff in there. So I just want to share a little bit that's from this book, and it's this short little conversation that starts with a student talking to the sage. And the student says, I really want to meditate. And I've tried so many times and I always quit. And this happens actually with a lot of things that I want to do. And then the sage responds, how? And the student responds, what do you mean, how? And the sage says, how do you not meditate? Go back home and meditate on how you don't meditate and come back and report how it is. So the student does this. They notice how they don't meditate, and they come back and they describe a long list of distractions, all the things that they're doing instead of meditating. And then there's some back and forth that's happening. And part of it is that the sage is pointing out, well, the student has what we might call like doubt, like hesitation, uncertainty, vacillation, this way in which they're not really able to be with the practice. But the sage, I think what's important here, when the student said, I can meditate even though I want to, the sage did not say, well, here's what's wrong with you, and here's what you should do. Instead, the sage said, well, why don't you look at it? How is it? What's that process like? What is that experience of not meditating like? And in this way, there's this orientation towards like how instead of why, or here's a problem and tell me how to fix it. There's this way, it's with this pointing towards like observation. And it's also pointing to like how things are a process. It's not just in a nice little tidy box. Here, this is a problem. Tell me how to make it not be a problem. This shift from what's wrong with me, why can't I, towards how does this actually unfold? Instead of, you know, like this stuckness into, well, let's get curious about it. Let's look at it. Let's experience it instead of slapping this label, this is a problem and it has to be different on it. Maybe there's something that you'd like to do and you find yourself that you haven't. Over the holiday, I spent some time with my brother and sister-in-law. And they wake up very early before the sun is up every morning and go for a 4-mile walk every day. And I thought, wow, that's fantastic. I joined them on those days I was there. It was so great. just kind of like start the day that way. And there have been a number of times when I have said, okay, I'm going to wake up in the morning and I'm going to get outside. And that lasts for as long as it lasts, that it stops. And so I was thinking, well, how is this, how can I incorporate this? Even though I had this intention to do this, I have stopped doing that. So maybe you have something like this too in your life. Is something you would like to start doing, get more sleep, exercise more, practice some creative endeavor, or maybe there's just things that you don't quite do that you would like to. And then you could ask, well, what is the process of not doing it? What's behind that, instead of just getting into this loop, I want to, but I don't do it. And then because I don't do it, I feel bad about myself. So then I want to do this other thing. And then I don't do that. And because I don't do it, I feel bad about myself. So then I do something else. And then our whole life can be like this. Terrible. I mean, terrible in the sense that it's dukkha, suffering. We don't have to do that. So the Buddha points to this too. And, of course, using different language, not in the same language that we find in this contemporary book by Sherry Hooper. But there's this sutta. It's called Wilderness in the Heart. I love this expression, wilderness in the heart. The Pali word is cetokila. Ceto is a word like citta. Some of you will know this can mean either heart or mind, or maybe like a combination. And the Buddhist teachings, there isn't a distinction between mind and heart like we have today in contemporary times. And some of this way I like to think about wilderness in the heart. And there's this way that kila, cetokila, kila can be like this uncultivated patch of land, wilderness. But it could also be a way in which it's can't be cultivated because maybe it's parched and dry or really packed down or something, and things have difficulty in growing. And in the sutta in particular, it's pointing to how like there just there's doubt and there isn't energy for practice. The sutta goes, the Buddha is speaking, and he says, there are five kinds of wilderness in the heart. What five? First, a person has doubts about the teacher. They're uncertain, undecided, and lacking confidence. That being so, their mind doesn't incline towards keenness or commitment or persistence and effort. So saying that, because they have this doubt, they're a little bit unsure, then they're not leaning into practice. So the first one is doubt about the teacher. The second is doubt about the teachings. The third is the doubt about the community of practitioners. The fourth is doubt about the efficacy of practice. And the fifth wilderness in the heart, this place that's uncultivated, where things don't grow very well, is having some resentment towards other practitioners. There's this way in which there can be this hardening of the heart, if you will. When, again, some of our companions on the path. And so we might just kind of like lump this list of five into just a group of three, make it a little bit easier to think about. So the first wilderness of the heart is this lack of confidence or doubt about uncertainty, about hesitation, about vacillation, about, all these words we could use about the teacher and the teachings. Maybe there's this way this can look in our lives, like maybe this teachings, these are thousands of years old. What do they have to do with life today? They seem irrelevant. Or maybe about a teacher, maybe about this teacher. This teacher doesn't quite get it. She doesn't understand how my life is, or I don't know, is she completely enlightened? Why is she sitting there in the front of the room with a microphone? There's this way in which we might have kind of this, just this way in which we might feel like things don't, the teachings are too idealistic and maybe they feel like they're irrelevant. And this way in which this lack of confidence, this doubt, kind of like maybe dries up a certain patch of land in the heart, if you will, and makes it difficult for like new things to take root and to grow. So a second kind of like wilderness of the heart is the lack of efficacy in the practice. Maybe there's this way we have this idea, is it really possible to have more freedom? Is it really possible to have more peace and ease? Do people really actually become more free with this practice? Are there people that are awake? What is this really have a difference? And or maybe it's a little bit different. It's like, I've been doing this for years. Some people like to say, I've been practicing for, and then they'll tell me how many years as a way to kind of say that. But, and it doesn't, I hasn't had the results that I wanted. So maybe there's this way that people can feel like, I'm not sure this practice works. I've been showing up for so much time and hasn't had the effect that I wanted it to. Or maybe there's this feeling of, does cultivating kindness or following the precepts, having an ethical life, does it really make a difference? There's so much craziness and awfulness happening in the world. What does what I do, does that make any difference? Maybe there's this sense of, maybe this feeling or this concern that the practice maybe doesn't really work, so we don't really want to commit. We don't want to actually lean in and do the practices. Maybe we want to more just, passively absorb some teachings and be inspired for a little bit and then go home and do exactly the same thing we've always done, which is fine, which is perfectly fine. We, all of us, we start where we are. This practice is not asking us to be completely different. It's trying to meet us where we are, and it's just inviting us to show up where we are. So first is doubt about the teacher and the teachings. The second, we could say, is doubt about the efficacy of the practice. And the third is could be doubt and or resentment or bitterness towards other practitioners. Maybe there's a sense of, these aren't my kind of people here. They seem different than me. They look different, or they have different politics. They have different views. I'm not sure these are my people. Or maybe there's a sense of, well, yeah, I talked to one person, this practitioner, and they started to give me advice about what I should do, and last thing I want is somebody to be giving me advice. I'm saying this because early in my practice, this happened to me. And it was an extended practice period, and there was guided meditations and teachings, and then we would get into small groups and talk about them. And in one of these small groups, this after I had shared something that felt a little bit vulnerable about what was happening in my life and my practice, somebody was giving me advice, and it felt like, you should do this. And I felt like, oh, ouch, 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 ouch. And then I didn't come back for quite some time just because I wanted to avoid that person, you know, to make sure that I wouldn't be in that setting. So maybe you've had an experience like this. Maybe somebody, maybe you feel there's a, weren't seen, or maybe you feel hurt by something that was said. Whether it's maybe I can be in the role of just another practitioner in this way too. Maybe you felt like you haven't been seen or heard or understood by some of the teachings that I have said. Or maybe sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. there's all these ways, right, in which doubt can be planted and can grow. The doubt, maybe we could say, is growing. And in this little simile, the doubt is taking the form of making the ground barren or dry or hard so that other things can't grow. Or maybe it's a wilderness. It's completely covered with, I don't know what kinds of plants this would be, but plants that are really difficult to get out of the way. I mean, now we have tractor or bulldozers, right? That maybe we can make everything work. I don't know. But can we imagine, like, this, in the time of the Buddha, this idea, there's just a wilderness. Can't find your way in there. Can't find your way out. So this is a way, these different ways, uncertainty, doubt about the teacher, the teachings, the efficacy of the practice, other practitioners, how a wilderness in the heart forms. And very often it's not dramatic when this happens. Maybe it's just this little sense of an inner lack of juiciness, dryness. Maybe there's this practice that once felt alive and so meaningful now kind of feels flat and boring and tedious. Maybe you sit down and you go through the motions. Maybe you come and you meditate, but there's not much heart in it, or there's not much, you're just sitting there just daydreaming, waiting for the bell to ring perhaps, or, which is okay. I mean, this happens sometimes, especially if our day has been really busy with a lot of thinking. Then when we come to find our way here and to sit, we find that the mind just keeps on going this sitting. Or maybe this wilderness in the heart can feel like a stuckness, like things aren't really moving forward. And if, like, maybe how that the sage said to the student in the earlier part of my talk here in that story, if you were to ask, well, how is this right now? You might notice there's a little bit of heaviness in the body, maybe some dullness in the mind. Maybe you can tune into the breath, but it's not very interesting, or you don't feel quite engaged with it. Or maybe this wilderness in the heart feels like this chronic ambivalence. You like the idea of having a path of practice that can lead to more peace and freedom, but you're noticing that maybe there's a part of the mind's like, I don't know, you know, this way, kind of like a disconnecting, pulling back, and I'm not sure. I think everybody starts, well, I don't know if everybody starts this way. Maybe I'll say it's not uncommon to have a season that's like that. Maybe often in this beginning, we start with some enthusiasm and like, wow, there's something here that's interesting and feels alive and relevant for me. And then there can be a way sometimes, not all the time, there can be a season where it feels like there's a little bit more ambivalence and less enthusiasm. Maybe you have this sense of, I've heard this before. This doesn't apply to me, or something like that. Or maybe there has been some disappointment, or some resentment, or some anger, or some hurt, some tender feelings that have come up, either with an interaction with somebody associated with the community or with me. Or maybe it's just the practice has brought this up, allowed that to bubble up to the surface. And maybe on the surface it's like, oh, I'm fine, I'm over that. But then if you were to turn towards the experience of it, you might find that maybe there's a little bit of tightness in the jaw, or some clenching in the chest, or something. Or this little heaviness, feeling like, ugh, that kind of a feeling. So maybe there are places in the heart, in the mind, that have become a little bit like unturned soil, where trust and energy, enthusiasm or commitment or perseverance don't flow easily. And the first step is not to argue with them. The first step is not try to, you know, rustle up some energy or something like this. I would say the first step is to just see how that experience is. Clearly, kindly, with gentleness. That's what the practice is, including not wanting to practice. There's this way we kind of like think that not wanting to practice is somehow like separate and that something's happening over there. And what I'm pointing to is just notice how not wanting to practice feels. And even if just briefly, it feels like I'm angry, dang it, and then just go off and do something else. But just in some certain way can we turn towards. Because the Buddha, getting back to this sutta, when he was talking about these wildernesses in the heart, he points to how to work with them, how to go forward, this wilderness of the heart. The sutta, the quote is, to abandon these five kinds of wildernesses in the heart, you can develop the four kinds of mindfulness meditation. Some of you will be familiar with the Satipatthana Sutta, four foundations of mindfulness, four establishments of mindfulness. These are four domains of our experience in which we can pay attention, in which we can notice and bring some awareness towards. So instead of trying to argue ourselves into something, or belittle ourselves, or chastise ourselves, or something like this, the Buddha is pointing to, and Sherry Huber and her little book is pointing to, what is that experience like? And the Buddha's these four, like how, like the sage in the story of the beginning of the story is, how is the wilderness showing up in the body? What is the bodily experience? How is it felt? Is it felt as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? That's the second Satipatthana, the second area of mindfulness. The third is, how does it show up in the mind? What is the mental experience? And the fourth can be interpreted a number of different ways. I'm interpreting it here as, are there some patterns? Are there some familiar patterns that we're seeing that show up? So I'll just say a little bit about these four. How is this wilderness showing up in the physicality right now? Maybe the chest is tight, the shoulders are slumped, maybe the breath is shallow, maybe there's a knot in the belly, maybe there's a way in which there's just a lack of vitality, the sense of, ugh. So this is a real emphasis on just the physical sense. We're not interpreting it, we're not making it mean something, we're just being with this physical sense of not wanting to do whatever it is we don't want to do. Get up early and go for a walk every morning. Meditate. Or spend less time on screens. Or whatever it is. So when we notice this sense of not wanting to, we can feel like the front of the torso and the throat and the face. These are common areas where there's can be some emotions there or some constrictions there. just turning towards the physical experience. We're not solving doubt, we're just learning how it feels in the body. The second is Vedana. Some of you might be familiar with this, translated as feeling tone. This feeling of not wanting to, is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Is it neutral? We're just simplifying it really to this, because maybe there's a whole lot of busyness in the mind, justifying and trying to figure it out, solving the problem. But sometimes it's easier just to simplify it. Is this experience pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? And there's a way that simplifying it in that kind of way can have all the spinning in the mind, just kind of have something to land on. Oh yeah, this is unpleasant. And then can that be okay? Like, oh, this is an unpleasant experience. Oh, it's a tiny bit pleasant that I recognize that it's unpleasant and all the spinning in the mind. Calm down. It's neutral now that I notice it's a little bit pleasant. It's neutral. And then maybe you go back into something that's unpleasant. But there's a way, just simplifying things to pleasant, unpleasant, neutral can be helpful. And then in the third, we can ask, what's happening in the mind when we find ourselves not wanting to do something? What's happening in the mind? How is the mind right now? Maybe it's a little bit cynical or hopeful or dull, or maybe it's doubting or guarded. Is there like an attitude or a mood or a flavor, if you will, that's happening in the mind? Or maybe it's this is the narrative that happens in the mind when there's a lot of doubt. Maybe you could just say something like that. When there's a lot of hesitation, this is the stories that fill up the mind. This is the feeling of the mind. For some people, they can feel into, does it feel fast? Or is it slow, the thinking? Is it clear or is it dull? And then the last one is, how does this not wanting to do this, this doubt, this hesitation, this vacillation, how does it fit into patterns? Some patterns I might be familiar with. It could be, for those of you who are familiar with this, you could say something like, oh yeah, this is doubt, and this is how the hindrance of doubt feels. It's this experience. Or this is how restlessness feels. Or this is how aversion feels. I'm familiar with this. I am often filled with aversion. I don't want things to be the way that they are. I want them to be a particular way. And maybe there's a way that we can point to even sometimes in which the practice did feel satisfying or appropriate or healthy or nourishing in some kind of way. Because that's a pattern too. Maybe there has been a time in which the practice did feel alive and we didn't have so much hesitation. I'm using the word practice, but this for you could also be exercising, creative things, sleeping more, whatever it might be for you. So maybe watching how this feeling of doubt or this feeling having a wilderness in the heart, this impenetrable maybe area of the heart, how it actually becomes the path. How this pivot from I can't, I don't want to, actually just with a slight shift turns into the way forward. We saw this with Sherry Huber, where the student says, I can't meditate. And the sage says, well, watch how not being able to meditate happens. And that's practice. Just notice how not being able to do something happens. And that noticing, it brings a way in which we soften the sense of I'm stuck and I can't do something, and then adopting the identity, I'm the one that can't do it. Instead, it just turns into a process of like, oh yeah, look how things are changing. Look how my experience is. And then it's a little bit easier to find our way forward instead of having this sense of like, oh, I can't do it. So also, like the Buddha pointed to how a wilderness in the heart forms through doubt and resentment, and his pointing to how to meet it with just mindful attention to body or feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, or the mind, or patterns that we are familiar with. So you might sense whether there's any area of your life and your practice right now that it feels like a wilderness in the heart. Maybe half in, half out, kind of committed, not completely, which maybe you feel uncertain or feels barren and dry. There isn't a real vitality to it. And then just practicing with what arises. Rather than asking what's wrong with me, why can't I do this thing that I know is good for me and I want to do? Instead of asking this why question and putting a label on ourselves and boiling down, distilling ourselves into just this label, what's wrong with me? I'm the one that has something wrong with them. Why can't I do this? Instead of that, just saying, how is this wilderness in the heart? I like this expression. It feels accessible. How is this wilderness in the heart showing up right now? How is it showing up in the body? Is it pleasant, unpleasant, neutral? What's going on in the mind? Is this a pattern that I have seen before? And we just have to recognize it. We don't have to fix things. This is about noticing and trusting that noticing that things are changing and that they're processes and getting away from the stuck way in which we are labeling ourselves and labeling our experience is the way forward. Because having to fix it means that we've slapped this label of this is a problem on it. Instead, if we can be with the experience and notice the changing nature, then there's a way in which a way forward reveals itself, becomes known. It's a different way of being with experience. So a wilderness in the heart isn't a sign that we've failed. It isn't a sign that we're doing something wrong. It's just a place, quote unquote, an experience that's asking us to look more closely at how things are unfolding. To look more closely at our experience. One step, one moment of mindful attention at a time. Just one step, one moment at a time. To look more closely at how things are unfolding. Notice the unfolding. Notice how things are a process. And then a way forward becomes more clear, becomes known. Wilderness in the heart. And the path forward. So thank you. I'll end there and open it up for some questions and comments. Thank you.
Hi. I'm wondering how this is different from a lack of motivation to do something.
Lack of motivation?
Lack of motivation to do something.
I wouldn't say it's different. I would say it's the same. This kind of like this vacillate. I'm using doubt and hesitation, but this has like not having energy to go forward. And this and the sutta, he points to that, kind of also more specifically, not having energy going forward or to apply oneself. I would say it's the same.
You didn't say anything about lack of motivation, unless I was drifting off when you said it. So that does happen.
So can you describe, what is lack of motivation? What does it
feel
like?
I feel like I want to do, but I just can't motivate myself to do them.
And what does it feel like to not be motivated?
I don't know. When I know I could do something, but don't want to do something.
What does...
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah,
give me a clue.
Yeah, this is exactly what this is pointing out. Often we don't know. It's just like, I don't feel motivated. I can't do it or something like this. And the encouragement here is, what is the experience of not feeling motivated? It could feel like this. It could be like, oh, I should do this. I don't want to. Right? That's kind of what it feels like.
Yes.
And so just be to that experience. Like, yeah, it feels heavy. My posture is not upright. I feel tired. You know, and just to be with that experience is a way forward. It starts to bring some brightness in the mind and also interrupts the pattern of, I can't do it, something's wrong with me, everybody else can do it but me, or it interrupts that pattern of thoughts we can do. Is this helpful?
Not quite. I don't know. I know I can do whatever, I can do things, but I just don't feel that to do it.
And so my invitation here is to tune into the experience of not being able to do it. Okay. And this can be a way forward because it stops becoming a label, a certitude, and just becomes another experience. You're asking, I think what you're looking for is like a mental thing that is saying like, oh, just think about something X, Y, or Z. And if you could do that, you would have done it already. And instead, my invitation is, can you point towards the, can you be with the experience? And then things can start to unfold.
Well, I'm not sure that I understand, but, you know, you're trying, I know, to delve into what's in my mind. That's okay.
Let's see. What is the experience of feeling, and I'm of your left hand, just whatever's happening in your left hand?
I'm just holding it here and because it's warm. I don't know.
Yes, right. It's warm. And was it what it's touching? Is it soft? Or is it smooth or rough?
I don't know. Gee, I can't answer these questions. I don't know. It's just, I feel it's security, actually, where my hand is. It's just, it's warm and.
I just chose left hand randomly.
And I'm not giving you a good answer. I don't know.
No, it's just, I'm just pointing to the bodily experience. And this, in the beginning, this was not easy for me, right? I spent my life, you know, being a scientist, thinking a lot. And it definitely was a practice for me to learn how to be with the bodily experience. This is what I'm just pointing to. Can we just be with, you know, soft and cool?
You say just be with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it disrupts, kind of like the someone was
having. Don't worry that I'm not doing something that I feel I ought to be doing or am perfectly capable of doing, but I'm not motivated to do.
I think
I'm nuts, that's all I think.
I'm just pointing to a bridge that can help you get out of the stuck hole of I'm unmotivated, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. Just offering some steps out to be with the bodily experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
At times, could it be helpful to listen to doubt, like to keep us away from an unhealthy relationship or to steer us away from a guru who's actually a charlatan?
Thank you for asking us. There's healthy doubt and then there's unhealthy doubt, right? Well, we shouldn't be passive and just believe everything, right? Of course, we need some discernment and some wisdom. So yes, of course, of course. Unhealthy relationships, gurus who are dishonest or cult leaders, actually, or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
In terms of physical manifestations, I was told that if you feel a part of your body that is weak, when you meditate to a certain point, you will feel pain in that part of your body. I was just wondering if everyone else has that experience. For me, previously, when I meditated, when I had a weak neck, my neck was the first one to suffer. And then, you know, when my back hurt, it was my back. So I'm just wondering if that's true for everybody. Like, for some people, like internally, if they have a certain part of, like, say, the, you know, like the stomach, if the stomach is weak, they start to feel pain in that area. I don't know. Is that true for most people?
I guess that it depends on how we define weak and how we define pain. And so I would say, right, if there's a part of the body that's out of balance, as the mind starts to quiet down, then there's definitely parts of the body that are a little bit out of balance or there's some tension. Really start to show up and become known. But I don't know if I can make a global statement that a part of the body that's weak will feel pain. I actually don't know. Okay, and then this will be our last comment here.
I found it very helpful when you were talking about the resistance of not doing something and the temptation to label it and to go back to the experience and to look at very carefully what's getting in the way of you doing what you want to do. I know for me, I usually have this self-talk where I'll go, I was going to do that, I was about to do that, and then I got distracted. And I go into, why am I distracted now? And how can I remove that distraction so I can do what I intended to do, but I'm delaying doing? And I live alone, so it's really helpful when I go through that experience saying, now, this is what I had intended to do, and now I'm doing something else. And I'll pull myself back and I'll say, now, that's the thing that I really need to do, and now I'm distracted. So for me, the motivation is looking at why I got away from the original plan, so to speak.
And do you find that the why you're distracting yourself becomes clear?
Yeah, because it's usually the same answer, because I don't want to do it.
Yeah, but you don't want to do it. That we could say that's a distraction also.
That's a distraction too, but I'm procrastinating doing it because it's the thing I didn't want to do first, and I did the second thing second. So I like pull myself back and I go, okay, you're doing that because you don't want to do that.
Mm.
And it really helps me to get back on track because I'm, you know, I live alone and I don't have anybody out there telling me, I thought you said you were going to do that. You know, so I have to do that for myself. And I love that you pulled away and you said, don't label yourself when you're bad and you don't do it, you know. Get yourself back on the track.
Yeah.
I can identify with it.
Nice. Nice.
Good, I can identify with you.
Nice.
But I don't have a solution yet, so.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. And I wish you safe travels home and a wonderful rest of the evening. Thank you.